Hi, I'm Steve Goldstein, and this is the Friday Newscap podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
Justice Alito made very clear that preventing fraud, preventing voter fraud, is a sound state interest. States have an interest in preventing fraud, a strong and entirely legitimate state interest, he said. That concerns me. Everyone who's credible, who has looked into the issue of voter fraud, has found that it's a non-issue.
I am sick of the majority coming in and telling us what people of color need and ignoring what people of color are actually telling you. Because you can lie all you want about what your programs claim to actually do and then try to spin that into a poll to justify what is essentially furthering segregation.
So when you have a budget that pays down the debt that we have as much as we do, when you have infrastructure investment of $321 million, when you have $30 million going to developmental disability providers to provide essential services, I think it is myopic to think that this budget only benefits a certain group of people.
I have founded and ran big organizations at scale, complex organizations that have gotten great results. And I've done that by recruiting diverse teams, by holding people accountable, but ultimately by willing to approach problems in a different way. And again, that's what I'll do as governor.
With us to talk about the just-completed legislative session, the Supreme Court's ruling on a pair of Arizona voting laws, and more, our former Attorney General Terry Goddard. Terry, good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Doing great. And
on
former
nice, cool day.
Thank you for that, yes. And former Superintendent of Public Instruction, Jaime Molera of Molera Alvarez. Jaime, good morning to you.
Good morning, Steve.
Any comments on the weather, or should we move on? I wasn't.
No, I was going to comment on the suns, but
that's later in the show, man. That's later. Okay. Hey, Terry, let's start off with. I don't want to get into specifics yet at this point, but about the legislative session, one of the longest in history, quite contentious, which was affected in part, at least, by the pandemic. But general observations on where we ended up in terms of anything that concerns you, especially anything that gives you some positive vibes.
Well, I say not much in the area of positive vibes. I mean, I thank the Lord for the end of the fiscal year, because but for that, I think they would have staggered on and on and on. The 30th of June came around, and they pretty basically had to pass a budget and get out of session. So there were many things left on the table for which I'm grateful. So I guess that's the part I feel the best about. But no, it was a damaging session, starting with trying to hold the Board of Supervisors in contempt for a very phony final audit of the election results in Maricopa County. I think that probably is the culminating disaster of this session. A budget which opted for tax cuts for the rich instead of necessary funding for education. I think that's a tragic error, and one that we're going to live with for a long time. And restrictions on voting rights. That is a series of things that I think are going to make people justifiably very angry. This was a legislature basically with solutions in search of a problem. And they tried to, because they didn't like the results in the last election, they've tried to change the system. And I think that's just the wrong approach. And it's one that has huge implications for the ability of all Arizonans to have democratic results, democracy within our state. And I think those are the major mistakes of this session. But thank goodness it's over.
I mean, no doubt we'll talk a bit about the so-called audit at some point again in the rest of this half an hour, because we often talk about that. But let's start with the tax cut situation. The governor initially was aiming for a complete flat tax as far as income tax goes. That did not go through. But what about what Terry's saying in terms of the size of that tax cut? And the governor has sold it in terms of every Arizonan will benefit. Others will say, yes, people at a certain threshold will benefit much more than others.
Well, as you recall, I was on the show a few weeks ago talking about this and talking about the legitimate concerns, particularly about the localities that would have had to have made up a lot of the revenue sharing had it gone the way of the original version. However, like most things in the legislature, it's not a pretty process, and it is sausage making. But at the end of the day, it was a package that I think a lot of organizations across the state, business and community organizations, felt, and the cities and towns felt, that it was a very reasonable package. It did have a considerable tax reduction. It also had, I think, some very needed safeguards for small businesses, which we can talk about in a little bit. But it also had protections for the cities and towns, which I think they welcomed quite a bit. It also had some other key things that I think are very important from a fiscal standpoint. It paid down quite a bit of debt that we had, that we ignored for a long, long time. But it also has triggers, so that these reductions, a lot of these reductions, won't happen unless we hit these revenues as the majority and the governor have predicted. So at the end of the day, I think it was a reasonable plan. It doesn't force anything on localities. And at the same time, it does give quite a bit of relief to small businesses in Arizona that was hit by, in my opinion, a very onerous union tax that was put in place last November.
Jaime, to what do you attribute the length of the session? I mean, this went about as long as any session in recent memory. And, you know, there's this conventional wisdom at the Capitol that you hear sometimes that, you know, doing a budget, for example, is much more difficult when there is money to spend, because, you know, when there's no money to spend, you say no to everybody. But when there is money to spend, you have to say yes to some people and no to others, and that can drag things out. Of course, we talked about the pandemic. There were very slim margins in terms of political breakdown in the House and the Senate each. To what do you attribute the fact that this went almost into July?
I think it was two things. One, you're absolutely right. When they have money, it's much more difficult. In the 25 years that I've been down at the Capitol, it seems the opposite, but it's really true. When you have money, it just seems, for some reason, it's very difficult to get folks to get together and say, this is what we want to do. But the other thing is, let's face it, when you have these slim majorities, when you only had one person essentially in the Republican caucus had a veto over the entire budget. And that created, in a lot of ways, chaos. You had a lot of folks that said, look, I'm not gonna be a part of this unless I'm willing to get what I need. And on the flip side, people said, well, why can't the Republicans just go to the Democrats? Well, the Democrats, you know, in some ways, I think that one or two of them might've been reasonable and said, okay, well, let's work out a compromise. But they would have been just vilified by their caucus had they have done that. And I bet they wouldn't have been in office very long. So that's unfortunate. You have a situation where you have polarization, where you can't have that working together. But it created that kind of chaos, Mark, that caused the session to go into, you know, June 30th.
Terry, let me ask you about that, because there was hope at the beginning of the session with a one vote margin in each chamber, as Jaime referenced, that Democrats maybe would have more say than they have in the past, you know, if not on everything, then on some things. Did Democrats do as well as they could have in terms of trying to insert themselves into the conversation and maybe, you know, influencing policy as much as they could have?
Well, that's a what if question. I think they did their best. You know, Minority Leader Boulding and his team basically tried to move the needle, but the idea that they would face elimination if they tried to do some kind of collaboration with a group of Republicans, I think is not true. I mean, Jaime's a longtime and veteran observer of the legislature, but I think in this case, there were a lot of people, especially in education and in election law, that were very interested in working together with a moderate majority. But it didn't happen because the solidarity in the Republican caucus, although it was a tiny majority, nonetheless was able to cram this through without any Democratic votes. So it was not a question of consultation or consensus. It was a consensus of we're going to get our way. We're going to get the tax cut regardless of the needs of education. We're going to overcome the strong statement that the voters made at the ballot box against education vouchers. And we're going to do it anyway. Maybe they changed the system a little at the very end, but it's still a basically a poke in the eye to Arizona voters who said they didn't think vouchers and the attack that that implies upon public education was something that they would support. But the legislature does, and they said, we're going to give it to you anyway, regardless of what the vote was. And then this crazy session that I think the Democrats very appropriately tried to curb to say that we've got a fraud problem in elections in Arizona, which is just blatantly untrue, was, you know, perpetuating the lie.
Yeah, Terry, I'm going to go a little bit more general on this one because this is something both you and Jaime can address. Jaime obviously referred to Invest in Ed. You talk about the effort to expand ESA vouchers, and that was obviously going contrary to what a majority of voters said they didn't want a few years back. So there are also efforts, again, at the Capitol. This seems to be pretty common, about trying to make it harder for ballot measures to go to voters and for that to be actually put out there, even though, of course, we go back to the state constitution, major part of Arizona is the fact that you can have citizen measures out there. Terry, let me start with you on this one. Is there a concerted effort? Is it stronger than you've ever seen to try to limit some of these voter measures? And then Jaime, please jump on that right after.
Oh, absolutely. The litany of efforts to and many of them didn't make it through this session, but boy, they got a lot of traction. The one that said that you had to read the whole thing to the voter before they could sign, you know, obviously would have brought all initiatives and referendums to a crashing halt. And others that were one tried to change the what the rule would be. If you were voting on an initiative, you'd have to have 60%. Of the electorate instead of 50% to pass it. I mean, silly stuff, but nonetheless, seriously discussed. Those two did not pass, let me make it very clear. But they were seriously discussed because this is a legislative majority who hates the ability under the Arizona Constitution for citizens to do legislation. We have the initiative and referendum and recall in Arizona. We're one of about half the states that does that, and I think it's a precious right for our citizens. But it's one that the legislature thinks those items should be in their sole province, so they're constantly trying to eat away at the rights that citizens yeah. have in the Constitution to bring initiatives and referendums.
And Jaime, you've been on both sides of the initiative and referendum fight. What are your thoughts about the latest efforts here?
Well, in my opinion, I wish, and I mentioned this to a lot of the Republican leadership, that they would have spent more time in looking at reasonable and needed reforms in the initiative process. To me, that is something that is broken in our state. I agree it's a precious right that we have in our state, the initiative and recall process. However, it has been bastardized over the years. I mean, we've seen where you literally have tens of millions of dollars that pour in from one or two sources from outside of Arizona. They don't even live here. And they're able to get these initiatives on the ballot, very polarizing initiatives. And the problem with these initiatives, as we all know, we've talked about it quite a bit, is that once they are put in place, they're pretty much locked in perpetuity. And it's just not good policy for the state of Arizona. And it's just not good policy in general. So I think what we need to do are reasonable reforms. I would grant that some of these bills that were put in place in reaction to this so-called fraud, I think, was an overreaction, and I've said that before. There was a lot of silliness involved. However, there's some real things that we do need to tackle in this state. Like, for instance, why wouldn't we allow for proportional percentage of signatures in order to qualify for the ballot in each county? So for you can right now, when you have these signature gatherers get paid by these out-of-state interests, they go to Maricopa where all the people are, or Pima County where all the people are. They get the signatures and then they're on the ballot. And nobody else in Arizona really has a say. Those are the kinds of things that I think would make sense. And if we kind of got past ourselves and we can start talking about the things that really make a difference, so hopefully we can get at these things in the near future.
I mean, let me ask you about one other issue that was approved at sort of the last minute of the session. That is a per diem increase for out of Maricopa County lawmakers. This has been an issue for a lot of years that lawmakers right. say, you know, look, it's not enough money to rent an apartment or a hotel or eat or whatever. And one of the arguments is if you raise the per diem and make it less an out-of-pocket experience for legislators, you will get better people running for office. Do you think that if the governor signs this, that we will get better qualified candidates serving in the legislature?
I don't think just because of this particular, I think it's a reasonable piece of legislation. I really do. I mean, the per diem amounts were ridiculous, particularly if you just link it to inflation. It's just been woefully low. I also think, and I probably get excoriated for saying this, but our legislators at all levels are just paid way too low. That's something that has to be addressed. And that's something I've been saying for 20 years. I'm not saying this to ingratiate myself with legislators, because I think, quite frankly, if we had a higher level, there'd be more people running for the legislature, and a lot of them would be knocked out.
Well, and to be clear, the salary part has to go to voters, and voters have typically right. voted that down in the past. So this is the one thing that that legislators themselves could do.
Our guest today, former Arizona Attorney General Terry Goddard and former Superintendent of Public Instruction Jaime Molera of Molera Alvarez. Guys, we're going to change up as we begin our second segment here. U.S. Supreme Court decided on a couple of Arizona voting laws, and Attorney General Mark Brnovich actually spoke with All Things Considered Ailsa Chang yesterday. She asked Brnovich to articulate the difference between what's deemed inconvenient for voters and what represents unequal opportunity for voters.
It's not just about Arizona. It's about what does the Constitution and the Voting Rights Act require. Mm-hmm. And as we maintain, in fact, literally the first sentence when I did the oral argument, and I said to the court that public servants have no more sacred duty than protecting the people's right to vote, but we have to maintain confidence in the results and in the process.
Terry, let me go to you on this one. One of your successors in the Attorney General's office, Mark Brnovich, argued that before the U.S. Supreme Court about so-called ballot harvesting, about voters and having their votes counted if they voted outside their precinct. What are your thoughts on the argument that the Attorney General made and how the Supreme Court decided?
Well, my thoughts are almost unprintable. Justice Alito said in his opinion essentially was it doesn't really matter what you do to restrict a particular group's access to the ballot if taken in totality they still have other ways to vote. So the two items that are being discussed here essentially affect disproportionately Native Americans, which have huge geographic areas. And in fact, what they diminishingly call ballot harvesting was simply a way for many Navajos in particular to be able to cast a ballot, given the huge distances that they have on their reservation. The other provision of voting outside a precinct, you know, all the registration rules still apply. So somebody who may be constrained on election day, they didn't vote absentee, but somehow they go to the wrong polling place. Those ballots were thrown out, and I thought it is about Arizona because of all the ballots in the country that were thrown out for being in the wrong polling place, one quarter of them were in Arizona. 10,000 votes were nullified in the last election. Because although they were registered voters and they were valid voters, oh, they showed up at the wrong polling place, so we're not going to count them. I don't get that, and I really don't get, or actually I want to, backhanded way, compliment Attorney General Brnovich, because he was asked three times by Ailsa Chang in that interview if there was any evidence of fraud in the Arizona election, and he never answered the question. And the reason for that is really clear. Because we don't have evidence of fraud in the Arizona elections. The Arizona elections are something we should justifiably take great pride in. They're well run. They're a nonpartisan exercise. We've had Republicans and Democrats, but mostly Republicans, running the election system in Maricopa County and throughout the state of Arizona. And having been involved, as Jaime Molera has been, and for many years in Arizona elections, you win and lose, you take your lumps. But I've never thought of attacking the system because I think we do it extraordinarily well. But now a group of people, including the Attorney General, are attacking the system without any evidence. He didn't produce one thing after three questions that said, yeah, here's some things we were concerned about in Arizona, and this whole issue of transporting ballots is part of the problem. No, he couldn't say that because it isn't true.
Jaime, one of the arguments that supporters of the law on ballot collection argued was that, you know, we shouldn't have to wait for there to be a problem to try to deal with it. And to Terry's point, there hasn't been any evidence of fraud or illegal, you know, people doing things with ballots that they shouldn't do once they've collected them. How, like, from your reading of this ruling, how broad or narrow do you see it relative to the rest of the Voting Rights Act?
Well, so let's look at what is actually allowable. So right now, and this won't change, if a person allows their a family member, allows a household member, or a caregiver, they can also take that ballot and deliver it to the appropriate, or an election official can come and take that ballot to and make sure that it's appropriately counted. And we also have a very liberal process in Arizona, which is, I know that's usually not the case with our state, but we really do when it comes to voting. We allow for people to vote almost a month in person or through the ballot prior to that election. And I think it's a good reform. It allows a lot of access. But the group that, let's be honest here, the groups that really want this ability to go out and get those ballots, because they have a high degree of confidence that those areas are going to be beneficial to them, are a lot of the unions that they believe. And let's look at who are the group in this case was the Democratic National Committee that was up against Mark Brnovich in this case. They knew that they had to have a mechanism that allows them to be more competitive in Arizona. I mean, their group isn't going to Sun City and collecting ballots. They're going to areas that they believe has the highest efficacy of success for them. So that's where I think we need to look at this from a very practical point of view. This rule, and in a lot of ways, I compare it to when we put in place, I remember years ago, the requirement that you have to demonstrate that you had a voter ID, some kind of an identification, an official identification. And that was just vilified by saying, oh, that's going to just disenfranchise all these voters. It's going to be a return of Jim Crow. And none of that has happened, because we all know that everybody, from my 84-year-old mom in Nogales, Arizona, still has her license and still votes and still is able to do that. People are able to comply with the law. I don't think it's going to be as dramatic as it's being portrayed. And it's just, like I said, let's look at this as more of a common sense than anything that's trying to be malicious towards minority groups.
Terry, I want to ask you briefly about the other aspect of the other law at play here dealing with out-of-precinct voting. And I wonder if as more of Arizona's counties move to vote centers, Maricopa County obviously does it, Pima County has said that it plans to do it, does that prohibition on counting votes from out-of-precinct voting places, does that become less of an issue with more voting centers?
Oh, I think it becomes less of an issue, but let's think about why something like that was enacted. Who is most likely to vote out of precinct? Well, it's somebody that's working. It's somebody that maybe a new voter, maybe a first timer, and they didn't carefully figure out where their vote should be cast, and they went to the wrong place with their absentee ballot. This is crazy, because there has been no. You're absolutely right. The system in Arizona is moving toward a unified system. It doesn't matter where you show up in Maricopa County. You can vote there and you can vote legally. But for the counties that haven't adopted that situation yet, this is a prohibition now affirmed by the Supreme Court, which throws out a whole lot of ballots. But with the situation in terms of keeping the registration rolls, we know who is a valid voter and who is not, regardless of what precinct they show up in. So the idea that they're somehow trying to commit fraud is just wrong. And why you have an action taken to prevent a harm of which there is no evidence that it ever has happened, I just find is making an unnecessary barrier to voting. You just don't have to do it. And there's only one group of people who are likely to be offended or impacted, and those are folks that are that a particular group in the legislature today don't want to have them vote. So, hey, we'll figure out all the ways in the world that we can put roadblocks in their way, and here's one. And unfortunately, the Supreme Court has said, well, that's okay if they have other options. Well, on election day, maybe they don't have other options. And that's why H.R. 1 at the federal level is so important, because it would at least establish some some goalposts in terms of our elections across the country that couldn't be moved. And I think that's something that we've got to move toward, or we're going to constantly have this changing in the rules to try to restrict the voting electorate, okay, rather than they have a group try to appeal to the majority. They're trying to change who the electorate is.
Less than a minute left here. So, Terry, very short answer here on this. How much?
I don't do that.
Well, very, very short. Does this impact the 2022 election in Arizona? Any of the things we've talked about?
Those two, I don't think do. They're on the periphery. I would like to talk about the disclosure decision by the Supreme Court, if I could do that. Wait, in my 16 seconds that I've got here. They issued another opinion in California, which appeared to say that California couldn't ask for donor disclosure.
We'll have you back on to talk about that, because I know that's a passion of yours.
And let me agree with Jaime Molera. Okay. I want to show there's at least one point on salaries on the legislature. He's exactly right.
Okay, and
we paid people a pittance, and then we criticize what they do.
Live radio, Terry, running out of time. Jaime Molera, is this going to affect 2022 election in Arizona?
No.
Okay.
No.
And Jaime, how many games will it take the Suns to win the finals?
If it's Milwaukee, 6. It's Atlanta, I think they'll sweep Atlanta.
Okay, and Terry, can you guys agree on the Suns winning the championship?
Yeah, you heard it here first. I'll defer to Jaime.
Okay. Terry Goddard, Jaime Molera, guys, thanks. Take care.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's big stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. If you have any questions or comments, please email us at theshow@kjzz.org. I'm Steve Goldstein, and thanks for listening.